And this is KTOO. I'm Yvonne Krumrey. Thank you for tuning in. Juneau residents had a chance to ask questions and offer comments on a proposed fifth cruise ship dock at two public meetings this week. The city will soon choose whether or not to approve a tide lands lease to Huna Totem Corporation for the project. Juneau's tourism manager, Alex Pierce, says these meetings give the city a sense of what the community wants and doesn't want to see in a fifth cruise ship dock.
The lease is the Assembly's ultimate opportunity to approve or deny the project. And right now, our job and goal as staff is to bring something to the Assembly for final consideration that provides our best attempt at something that's going to be good for the community.
Concerns ranged from a blocked view of the channel to the proposed dock's distance from downtown businesses. Attendee Kathy Coghill says it's important that those leading this decision consider how the project affects the lives of Juneau residents.
I think there's a lot of fear that we can't ask for a fair shake because we're going to scare away the tourists. We're not going to scare them away.
Huna Totem's Susan Bell said the meetings offered a chance for residents to get reacquainted with the proposal after an appeal filed in the summer of 2023 stalled it for months. That appeal argued that the proposal didn't do enough public outreach on the project.
The pace of the project will be at the discretion of the city. So I think having good turnout and good feedback, they'll feel like they're doing, you know, they're doing their job in making sure that the people have a chance to be informed and engaged.
In 2023, the Planning Commission approved permits for the dock and the waterfront development. Next, Huna Totem will present a draft of the tidelands lease to the Assembly at a Committee of the Whole meeting, using feedback given this week. There will be further opportunities to give public testimony at that meeting as well. Comments can also be emailed to assembly@juneau.gov. A key public sector union and some Democratic state lawmakers are calling on Governor Mike Dunleavy to release the results of a $1 million study on how competitive the state's salaries are. As Alaska Public Media's Eric Stone reports, the study was originally due last summer, and lawmakers say that delays will complicate efforts to write that state budget.
It's no secret that the state of Alaska has struggled to recruit and retain qualified staff for state jobs. An average of 16% of state positions remain unfilled as of November, according to figures obtained by the Anchorage Daily News. That's about twice the vacancy rate generally thought of as healthy, according to legislative budget analysts.
The solution, it's not rocket science.
That's Heidi Dragas, the executive director of the union representing a majority of rank-and-file state of Alaska employees. And the solution, as she sees it, better retirement and, of course, better pay.
This is a problem that has been plaguing state government for years, and it is only getting worse.
Draga says the large number of open jobs is hobbling key state services, and Alaskans are feeling the effects, says Senator Bill Willikowski, an Anchorage Democrat.
We've been unable to fill prosecutor jobs. We've been unable to fill snowplow operator jobs, teaching jobs, of course, on the local level, clerk jobs for the courts, which backs up our court system, and so on and so forth.
It's been a problem for years. So in 2023, the legislature put $1 million in the state budget to fund a study looking at whether the state's salaries are adequate. The results were supposed to come in last June. Willikowski says he's been hearing from constituents looking for the study's findings. He's asked for it, and so far, he says he still hasn't seen it.
And this has just dragged on and on and on, and now we're 7 months later, and we still have nothing, and they're refusing to release any documents at all. And that's very troubling because this is a critical topic that we need before we go ahead and go into session.
People outside the government have been asking, too. Blogger Dermot Cole filed a public records request for any drafts of the study that have been completed, but state officials have thus far declined to release them. They say they're exempt from disclosure under Alaska's public records laws. The governor's administration says the most recent draft is allowed to stay under wraps under the executive communication and deliberative process privileges, which protect some documents related to internal decision-making in the executive branch. And earlier drafts are exempt from disclosure, too, the administration says, because they've been superseded. To Willikowski, that's absurd.
It's laughable. It's wild. That's not how the process works.
Dunleavy's office told state agency heads in December that the final study likely wouldn't be done until the middle of the legislative session, which runs January to May. His deputy chief of staff says they're looking for more data. Willikowski, though, says he's concerned the Dunleavy administration is trying to manipulate the study's conclusions.
Look, we didn't fund $1 million to get some politically massaged study. We funded $1 million so that we could get an objective organization to go ahead and look at this problem and to tell us what the numbers look like, to tell us how competitive we are.
Senator Mike Schauer, a Wasilla Republican, though, says he's less concerned. He says he'd like to see the results, but he also sees the value in waiting to see the full picture.
I think that in this particular case, it is important that the administration or even the legislature or the judicial branch, all of which commission studies, ensure that they are appropriately finished, vetted, QC. Sometimes you don't get back everything you were looking for. Sometimes you want more.
But majority caucus lawmakers say they're not interested in waiting. Incoming House State Affairs Committee Chair Ashley Carrick, a Fairbanks Democrat, says she plans to take a look at the issue as the session begins.
I think that there are a lot of questions that are unanswered, and we will be spending the first week of the House State Affairs Committee in part addressing the lack of a response from the Department of Administration.
Drangus, the public employee union leader, sent a letter to her membership asking them to sign a petition calling on the state to release the drafts of the study. It quickly amassed more than 1,000 signatures. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Eric Stone.
Seven tribal organizations across the state of Alaska, from Mary's Igloo to Metlakatla, received over $12 million from the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development last month. As KRBD's Jack Darrell reports, the funds are meant to help build stronger, more affordable communities.
Seven tribes, seven grants, ranging from $1 million to $2 million. It's part of a program called the Indian Community Development Block Grants. In total, the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, or HUD, doled out over $70 million for the program this year to just under 40 tribes nationwide. HUD said in a press release that tribal organizations can use the funds for anything related to community development. Building or rehabbing houses are the big ones, but it can also go towards buying land, community buildings, health clinics, and some economic development projects. For Metlakatla, it'll go towards more housing inventory. Ron Ryan directs Metlakatla's Housing Authority.
Housing is always, the need for housing, I should say, is always something that exists both in this community and other Indian communities, and communities growing, and there's a need, but the funding level just never seems to keep pace with the demand, so it's a challenge.
Ryan says the $1.8 million will afford them three lease-to-own single-family homes for tribal members.
And it also meets a need for providing employment for people in the community as well. Let's say, as we use our own construction crew, we employ local people to build the units that we get funded to build.
He says this is the first year Metlakatla has received the funding, though it's the third year they've applied. It's stiff competition. The other organizations in Alaska receiving funding are the Angoon Community Association and the Sitka Tribe in Southeast Alaska, the Chishnall Tribe and the Native Village of Chitna in the Copper River area, the Cook Inlet Tribal Council, and the Native Village of Mary's Igloo near Nome. Greg Stuckey works for HUD out of their Anchorage field office. He oversees Alaska's portion of these community development grants.
It's a fantastic program. There's a lot of housing needs. There's a lot of community needs in some of these smaller villages or pretty much anywhere across the state of Alaska. And so it's nice to have a stable source of funding to address some of those needs.
Stuckey says this federal grant program has been around for over 20 years. And through multiple presidential administrations, it's historically been a very stable funding opportunity for tribes who need it.
Of course, Congress sets the budget and decides how much to put into this particular pot of money, but it has been relatively stable at 72, 75 million.
The Indian Community Development Block Grants are awarded annually, usually soon after Congress passes the federal budget. The tribes who received this year's funding have 4 years to spend it and complete their building projects. In Ketchikan, I'm Jack Darrell.
And more than 50 people gathered in Homer on Saturday for the annual Women's March on Homer. KBBI's Jamie Deep reports this year's march stems from presidential election results and recent attacks on local health nonprofits.
Cars honked as more than 50 people marched through downtown Homer. Some carried signs advocating for women's rights, and many wore neon pink cat-eared hats. Those hats are a reference to crude terms President Donald Trump used when talking about women in a tape with Access Hollywood host Billy Bush. Audrey Wallace organized this year's march. She picked up the reins from organizers who spearheaded the city's first women's march in 2017. Wallace says there were several reasons to organize the march.
Just a combination of the election results and the incessant violence in our community, both with family planning and the recovery connection, I didn't see anyone doing anything, basically. So I decided that I had to do something.
Homer police arrested the man for allegedly shooting at Kachemak Bay Family Planning Clinic and Kachemak Bay Recovery Connection late last year. This year's march happened alongside others organized around the country. They were held 2 days before Trump's inauguration. Attendees of all ages gathered outside the Homer Education and Recreation Center before walking across downtown Homer. Savannah Bradley says marching connects her to the people behind local political action.
We are people too, and that our rights are represented by our individual selves. So being in person is often the best way to remember that and really see that there's other community members that have the same thoughts and feelings as us.
Casey Adderholt, another marcher, says she's ready to continue taking action moving forward.
This is a first step, and I think we've all thought today about what we're going to do next. We've met new people that we can do those actions with. We can draw a group together and show up at our legislative offices, show up at future marches, show up for our community.
Wallace says they hope to continue organizing events in the future. In Homer, I'm Jamie Deep.
And as for the weather here in Juneau, it's 39 degrees and raining a little bit this afternoon. It looks like the rain will slow a bit overnight, and tomorrow could be dry with a high of 40 degrees. Friday night, we may have some snow on the way. By Saturday, it looks like that could turn into rain. You're listening to KTOO. Thanks for tuning in.